But in man, insofar as he is reasonable, in this case, if he knows it's going to result in his death, so he won't do it. Why? Because the instinct is really an expression of the good. He's attached to the good, and he thinks that this is good because he's going to gain pleasure out of this. But if he sees he's going to gain tremendous pain, and he's going to die, so that he won't do it. Follow? So the instinct of sex is subordinated to the instinct of the good in general. It's a part of the good. You see? But the attachment is to the good. That's why he won't... That's why I won't do something which will kill him. Apparently today from the, want to hear the,
lines, there are two other things. Great ones.
What energy can he use towards, can he switch, a shiftable?
Right. Okay. The average can be stretched universally.
No. That's not the question. Even a person who can't express it in the universal, still, his still the specific instinct is under the ruling of the universal. See, then the question is, Now the question is, how much can he use of the energy? How much is shiftable? Can he shift to different areas? That's a different problem. But it's all under the universal. Nobody, nobody will, in his right mind, will drink a glass of water if he knows it has poison in it, right? Even though he might be thirsty. Oh. Huh? But can he do without water? No, he can't. He needs it. But the desire is not for water per se. The desire is for the universal good. Now, therefore, that's what the Rambam says. That if a person finds himself, that's the whole Rambam over there about the Shvil Azov, going from one extreme to the other extreme. Why? Because insofar as a person is subject to illness, not only physically a person gets sick, but a person gets sick psychologically also. And this is a phenomenon I want you to know, which the Rambam, you have to realize that that there are certain emotions that we have which prevent us from seeing from seeing life in the correct way. One of them is ego. Now, ego always wants to make sure that a person does not want to admit that a person is sick, especially psychologically. You know, I always maintain that a person really believes that the self is the psyche and not the physical. Why? I'll prove it to you. That he really has a soul. A person really believes that the self is the inner self, not physical self, no matter what he thinks his philosophy is. Because you see, if a person sometimes becomes sick, so he's ashamed many times to say that he's sick. They don't want to mention that they're sick. Why are they ashamed? Because it's an imperfection. An imperfection is a shame. They'll look down at you. Right? But let's say, for instance, a person finds himself sick psychologically. Psychological illness. He will usually, if he can, he will always say that the reason why he was in the hospital was for a physical illness, not a psychological one. Why? Because a physical illness is not as much of a shame as a psychological. Why isn't it as much of a shame as a psychological illness? Why? Because he perceives that the real self is the psychological, the soul, more than the physical. So which is a greater embarrassment, which is a greater busha? It's a greater busha to have the real self. Insofar as that's your physical, okay, this one, but at least I'm not crazy. Crazy is worse. Because that's the real me. Now, insofar as the premise is that it's bad to have something happen to you, which is a defect, so which is more you is going to be more of a defect. You know? And that's why a person is more embarrassed than psychological ones, because psychological is the main thing. So now, the point is this, that the ego in man many times prevents him from seeing the true philosophy. For instance, many times it will prevent the person from going for an examination, for a physical examination, because he wants to assume that he's healthy physically. But that a person can overcome. Much easier. Why? Because, alright, so physical is nothing wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But psychological illness, that is difficult to face. Because a person can't face the fact that he doesn't want to face the fact. He wants to believe that he's perfect. He doesn't want to believe that the ego doesn't want to accept that there's something wrong with him psychologically. But if you study the Rambam, you'll see that the Rambam does not treat it any differently. And the Rambam assumes that even a great chacham can become psychologically ill under certain circumstances and many times in his life, and he requires treatment. The only reason that we don't want to accept this is because our ego maintains that we're perfect. But this is not an idea in reality. The true greatness is not to become ill. The true greatness is to know what the truth is. And the truth is that everybody can psychologically, under certain circumstances, become ill and lose the balance. And what the person has to do is, the intelligent person, what he really should do is, not to deny the situation, The greatness is to recognize the situation and to deal with it in the proper way. The Ram says even the person who is on the level of B'chol D'Rochecha Da'eil, which is a level of a Navi, he says, the person can become, can have certain psychological illnesses that he has to do something. Even Chazal, the Rambam says, Chazal dealt with their own psychological illnesses. That's why the Rambam says you could never go by what a certain specific Amora did at a certain time. Who knows, there's lots of reasons to find a certain Amora that fasted for 3 years or something. So you'll say, well, fasting is good. He said, that's absurd. Because the reason why he did certain things are because he knew his soul, and he knew what his soul needed at that time in order to correct the psychological situation, so he did a certain thing. But you might be healthy in that area, and you're going to do something, in other words, you'd be taking medication for a disease that you don't have, which is crazy. You follow? But the whole concept of Chazal was that not to deny, but to keep a careful watch. The great person is not the person that isn't ill. The great person is the person that keeps a careful watch on himself, and notices how the psyche is going, and which way it's going, and where he needs a remedy, and where he doesn't. That's the chacham. So therefore, if a person would realize that, he would know that he would recognize the situation, and he'd know what to do in specific times. That's why if a person is too fixated to specific instinctual things, so what he has to do is go to the extreme, remove himself, and loosen the grip of the instinctual forces. That's what he has to do. Greatness is to recognize what a situation is and to operate that way. But it's difficult because, first of all, a person doesn't want to recognize something wrong with himself. You see, he doesn't want to recognize that. And secondly, that itself goes against the instincts. Because that itself, in other words, going through the process itself is a painful thing to the instincts. And it's not an easy thing to do. It's a difficult thing. The Rambam says it. Well, not only the Rambam, but other Chacham also mentioned that it's very dangerous many times to introduce a person to the real reason for doing things. That's why in many instances philosophical reasoning can destroy a person's life. Why? Why can it destroy a person's life? Very simply, one Chacham gave a mashal, a very good mashal. He said like this. He said, let's say for instance a person is raised by his parents and feel certain loyalty to the parents. After all, they're his parents. You have to act a certain way to his parents. You have a certain obligation to your parents. And down the block from this young man, there are other people, strangers. But these people are very good to this kid. And whatever this kid wants, these people give him. His parents don't give him what he wants all the time. But these people down the block do. Extremely nice. And really, of course, the kid has a wish that he would have those people for parents instead of his real parents. This is a kind of thing kids go through. Yeah. But nevertheless, he knows that these are his real parents and this is what he has to do. I mean, he can't help it. If it's a matter of who comes first or loyalty, he knows his first loyalty has to be to his parents. That's it. He would like to have other parents, but this is the way it is and he can't change the situation. Right? But let's say one day he finds out that his real parents aren't really his real parents. You see? He finds out that he was adopted. And it's not his real parents. Now what's going to happen to his emotions? What will happen? He will run to those people down the block. Right? Because there's nothing anymore restraining him. Follow? You understand what I mean? He says the same thing happens to an individual when he learns philosophical reasons. Why? Because before the person is attached emotionally to the good. In other words, you have to do this mitzvah. It's an emotion. You must do this mitzvah. You see? Not because it's good for you, but that's, you have to do it. Then the person learns, you know something? That the reason why God wants you to do it is because it's for your own good. You follow? It's not really, this whole thing that you imagine doesn't exist. In other words, you imagine some type of emotional force. But the truth of the matter is that the reason is it's for your good. It's not for Hashem's good, it's for yours. And this, if you do this, it's going to be better for you. So he says, you mean to say that there's this whole thing is a whole idea that this whole fear and all these things don't exist? The whole emotion is, it's just a rational thing? It's just a rational thing? Then the whole thing's gone. Why? Well, then the guy won't do it. Why won't he do it? Because the person isn't yet on the level to operate rationally. And most people aren't on the level to operate rationally. They operate from an emotion. So you have to tell them, this is the thing, this is the right thing to do. And what if I don't do it? That's terrible. That's it. But if you show him really rationally how he's harming himself, once you remove it from the emotional fear, from the area of emotional fear, and you show him exactly what's happening, he's liable not to do it. He's liable not to do it. You follow? Because the now he says, oh, I mean, that's all it is. It's just this reason. Yeah, why should I do it? See, that's the same thing. He's lost the, he found out that his parents really aren't parents.
He denied these before, denied again.
That's right. See? He found out that his parents, this whole fear that he had doesn't exist. Oh, you mean it's just rational? Now, the same thing over here. The taivas are always flattering a guy. The taivas are always calling a guy. The taivas are like the guy down the block, parents down the block. They're always calling the guy over, giving him whatever he wants. Come, this is very enjoyable, very pleasurable. What holds the guy back? His real parents hold him back. He can't do that.
It's
not right. His conscience. You see? Now, once he finds out that this conscience isn't really the prime factor, but it's really rational. Does it mean that this whole thing doesn't exist? Bingo. We'll go right to the taivas. Okay. That's why it's dangerous. That's why the Rambam was so afraid. The Rambam and others who were afraid to disclose the real reasons for many things in the Torah. Because let's say, for instance, you will show a person why it's better not to show a person the real reason why it's better not to eat chazer, not to eat treif. So let's say you show him a rational reason. Say, oh, you mean that's all it is? Well, I thought, who knows what's there? See? You show him rationally, you're going to do it. So it won't be better. So what do I guess? It won't be better. See? So the point is, if a person isn't capable of operating on a rational basis, so then disclosing the reason will harm him. You follow what I mean? Because the hold of the emotion is too powerful. Only a person who doesn't have whose emotions aren't really attached, fixed to the objects, then you can see any bit of rationality he will follow. That's very high level. That's why the Rambam says that when you train people, grip on the instinctualism so it's powerful, then you can show him the reason. But as long as he's not a reasonable human person, you can't do that. Just like when you train a child, you can't tell the child why he should go to school. It's good to be educated. It's good to have knowledge. He doesn't understand these things. You have to operate totally. This is right and this is wrong. Totally with the emotions. You follow? The difference between Adam and a behemoth is in one thing. The behemoth is attached to the specific. What's the difference between an animal and a human being? The difference is because an animal is attached to the specific thing. His specific instincts. Right? Okay? Whereas man is attached to a general concept of good. And the instincts are under the supremacy of the general concept of good. You follow what I mean? But insofar, that's the difference. What's the whole purpose? Like one of the big benefits of the Torah, I won't say the whole purpose, because we don't really know what the whole purpose is. It could be another purpose. But one of the benefits of the Torah, of my chalas asuras, of tarfas. Everybody, why can't you eat chazer? Why can't you eat the treif animals? The answer is because that differentiates a person from an animal. What differentiates a person from an animal? The ability to be able to resist the specific instinctual activity. To say, now I'll eat it, under these circumstances I'll eat it, it's kosher, and now I'll turn it down. That means that the supremacy of the intellect over the instinct, that's Adam. That's why that's Sefer Kedusha. Sefer Kedusha is two things, Mecholos Suris and Isur Bia. Why? Because there are two instinctual drives in man. One is the sexual instinct, and the other one is the appetitive. Taiva, eating. Those are the two basic drives in man. So these two drives, that's Kedashim to you. These two drives, it must be under the supremacy of the intellect. If it's not under the supremacy of the intellect, if he's totally under the instinct, he can't say yes or no. He doesn't make a decision. That's the whole thing. What's the difference between a person who lives according to the Torah and a person who doesn't? The answer is different. The person who doesn't live according to the Torah, he walks into a store. He smells something good. He has to eat it. That's it. He follows instinct. A person who does this 1 second. Is it kosher? Now, that 1 second is the difference between man and animal. That 1 second is the difference. Why? Because the moment he says, is it kosher or not, that means that the intellect is operating over the instinct. I could, and now I can't. See? I have the control. The moment he doesn't operate the way, he doesn't live that way, so then he's living like a behemoth, then he's living like an animal. The instinct is in total control. That means the instinct's fixated to the good, and he can't change it. That's the difference between the person who lives according to the Derech HaTorah and the person that doesn't. That is the difference. That one split second when he makes that decision. Yes? The biggest, without a doubt, the biggest therapeutic process, the basic therapeutic process is what? Is the Torah. That's the basic therapeutic process. A person who keeps Torah mitzvahs, keeps the halachas, that itself is the biggest therapeutic process. Why? Because anyone who keeps halacha properly has to have a tremendous control over the instinctual forces. You see, he has to, because he constantly has to make decisions. This way, Washington's time, this way, make a bracha here. So this is constant, a whole day. I mean, the terror is unbelievable in terms of the system. The whole day, the person is operating with the intellect, you see? Not only is he operating and exerting the supremacy of the intellect over the instincts, but he's even operating intellectually when he really understands what he's doing. If he understands the concepts in the halacha, then he's completely, he's living the life of the intellect, not just exerting an instinct. Apparently, Yahadis held that it's not enough for a person just to exert so... it's not enough for a person just to exert self-control. Self-control per se isn't enough. Self-control is a big thing. But it's not enough. A person requires, in order to have supremacy of the intellect, he must have the function of the intellect. And that's why there is no halach in the Torah that does not have chokhmah, concepts, does not have ideas and universals. Why? Because just going through the motions isn't enough. A person has to go through the motion and see the beauty of the chokhmah while he's doing it. That's when the intellect really gains supremacy. See? That's the concept of halach. That's the Rambam last week. That this is something which is zeicha techaye elam haba. Why? By constantly exerting the supremacy of the intellect and seeing the world of the intellect simultaneously, you see, that's what perfects the soul. That's halacha. That's halacha. Yeah. One therapy is simply the basic, the bulk of the therapy is Torah mitzvahs. That's the bulk of the therapy. But sometimes the Rambam says even that isn't enough. He has to go beyond that in certain specific areas. See, once he does that, then he's capable of reason. But until that point, he's not capable.
I mean, if the guy doesn't see the reality of Torah, that's like figuring out if there's a brick wall over there.
Right.
And you're saying the guy needs therapy?
Yes. That's right.
And you're saying that the basis for therapy is keeping Torah mitzvahs?
That's the basic bulk of therapy, right.
I mean, there's a lot of people that...
When I say keep Torah mitzvahs, all right, come on, David, ladies, yes, look, if you want to talk, I don't want to talk, but I just have to do simultaneously. When I say keep Torah mitzvahs, I mean really keep Torah mitzvahs. What's the difference between keeping Torah mitzvahs and really keeping Torah mitzvahs? Give me an example. You see? There are people that keep one part of the Shulchan Aruch, but that's dangerous because then the outlet is in the other part. And the outlet in the other part can undo everything that it keeps in one part. Give an example. Let's say, for instance, a person keeps Hilchus Shabbos and Hilchus Tefillah, right? He keeps Machol Chasuras. But he doesn't keep Hilchus Gneva. Okay? Now, all day in business, the man steals. And the man, so his big taifa is really to accumulate wealth, right? So he davens in the morning, fine. He davens, he makes sure he eats kosher, you know? On the contrary, goes to shul every Shabbos. On the contrary, there's certain ego satisfaction in doing that too, right? Hey, I'm a firm person, I'm a religious person. But really, his tremendous instinct for stealing, for accumulating large sums of money illegally against the halacha, that's where all his emotion is going, into that area. So he's willing to compensate in the other area for this. Has the person achieved perfection in that way? Definitely not. No question about it. No matter what he does, the point is the instinct is really getting an outlet somewhere else. That's why our Gemara says that he gets many, many shilas that come to him in the Machalos Asuras, but very few in Choshen Mishpat. What's Choshen Mishpat is the part of the Shulchan Aruch that deals with Dini Mamonos, you know, with money matters. Very few shilas over there. Anybody get away with it? What happened with this tremendous Chil Hashem recently with the Bergman and yeshivas and chassidim and all these things? I mean, this is not Torah. This has nothing to do. This is not the life of Torah. It has absolutely nothing to do with the life of Torah. Why? Because the life of Torah is one in which halacha must be, the instinct must be completely under the domination of the halacha. But if you're going to let one area for the instinct to get through, you can be sure it's going to go right into that area. You understand what I mean? In other words, like it would be like a person who's on a ship who makes sure that the water doesn't leak in, but it leaves one area, one big one hole, one area. But every other area is blocked off. See? No problem. The ship is perfect, except for this one hole right over here, right in the center. See? Well, that's it. So you can be sure all the water will come in through that one hole. Right? The same thing over here. That the instinct is like a tide. Now, if you stem the tide in every area, we allow one area for the tide to go through, it's going to run into that area. There's no perfection anymore. There's no perfection. Because it's worth it for the person. First of all, he uses the other area to cover up his defect in this one area. He thinks he's really a great person. Look, he davens, he's kosher, this and that. So this assuages his guilt. You understand what I mean? And the whole purpose, so therefore he has something which, on the contrary, he's using the Torah in a way where he will be worse. He'll be much worse. Now there's an interesting pasuk. There's a pasuk in the Navi. It says that, Ki yishorim darkei Hashem. Ki yishorim darkei Hashem. Tzadikim yelchu bo, upashim yikashlu bo. That the ways of God are just. The righteous will walk in them, and those who are not righteous, pashim, the ones who are ashamed, will stumble in them. What does it mean, will stumble in them? They won't do with the Russia, won't follow the ways of God. How does he stumble in the ways of God? So the answer is like this, that a righteous person, the person who really does the Torah, keeps the Torah honestly, he has to get better. Because the Torah is such a system where he's going to keep on perfecting himself. But a person who is a Russia can, on the contrary, could use the way of the Torah and make him much worse. Why would it make him worse? Here a person, if he didn't have the way of the Torah, so his chemdas amamon, he'd have to face himself. He said, look, I'm not doing which is just. But here, he can cover it up with the fact that he thinks he's a firm person. He's a firm person, he davens, he's kosher, and all that. So on the contrary, what happened? The person really became a greater Baal Taiva, and his Taiva was such that he was able to get away with it to a greater degree because he keeps the Torah. So the Torah became a means for helping his Taiva. So that's Yikashlu Bo, stumbling in the ways of God. The ways of God are just. But the point is, a crooked person could take it and can use it for his benefit and become worse through the Torah itself. You follow? That's the truth. So therefore, when I say a person that keeps the Torah, I mean a person that keeps the Torah in truth. Totally. But a person who uses one against the other, in other words, he allows his instinctual drive to go out in one area and covers it up with another area. When I say a person that keeps the Torah, I mean a person that keeps the Torah in truth. Totally. But a person who uses one against the other, in other words, he allows his instinctual drive to go out in one area and covers it up with another area, that person is using the Torah for his detriment. Not for his benefit, but he's utilizing it for his detriment. That's not really keeping the Torah. You know that that when you look around in society, you see a lot of New York City, for instance, you see, alright, not that many on the whole, but insofar as we're concerned, there are many, many people who are religious, right? But unfortunately, those who are religious in many instances do not really keep the Torah in the way that the Navi means Sadiqim Yelchu Bo. Many times it's the opposite way. Many times it's the opposite way. Yes? Or is it impossible? It's against the Torah. It's against the Torah. It's against the Torah. Torah doesn't say about it. It's against the Torah. Not allowed to. Not allowed to. He's facing death.
Yeah. That's one example. I don't know what the Rambam...
Really? No. Practically no. Apparently, in terms of practicality, this question is, can a person avoid all psychological illnesses? Is that what you're saying?
Well,
it's possible. It is possible. With emotions, you have to remember there's one thing that's difficult to size up. That's the quantitative factor. Quantitative factor. You could never tell which quantity. Like a person could say, well, I could do this. But there's a quantitative factor that could it could be misjudging. It's like the weather. Like the weather. Why can't they predict the weather? It's not because they don't know the qualitative factors. They know exactly what the storm centers are, but they don't know the quantity. A cold front is moving in from the north and the warm front from the south. They can't tell the quantities. The warm front can move in quicker, can move in to greater degree than they expected. It's not whenever they miscalculate. It's not that they didn't have the factors. When they look back and they say, what happened? They were totally crazy. The miscalculation is usually because of the quantitative factor. You see? Quantitative factor. Same thing with the emotions. The emotion is very hard to know the quantitative factor. But a person that knows the qualitative factor will certainly be better, more capable of prediction. But he still could make an error because the quantitative factor is very difficult to know. Yahadus maintains that really a person, underneath it all, a person is really attached to the universal good. See, not to the specific. But an instinct can gain strength and gain hold and override the universal good. Then what is the only thing that a person should do at that time? The opposite extreme. Basically, terror, but when we say terror, we mean really terror, completely. Terror means everything. That everything should be under the supremacy of the intellect. Right? It's chamdus and mamayin, it's everything. That's the halachic system was constructed in such a way that if a person really follows the halachic system, and everything's halacha, so then he has to improve himself. But if he takes one area as a cover-up for another area, then he's not benefiting. As a matter of fact, he could be harming himself. All right. But the halachic system was designed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be created in such a way that it covers every area. Every instinct, it covers, basically covers every area. The person subjects every instinct, every area, to halacha, so then he has to improve himself. Nevertheless, sometimes even that isn't enough. A person has to, the Rambam says a person has to act in specific to loosen the hold of the taiva on the its object. You see? That's a specific case. Alright? That's basically it. Okay.
Page 46.
Yeah. Are we going to deal with this in depth today?
As we mentioned about tefillah, and we mentioned that tefillah gives a person certain ideas about the Hashgacha. And he wanted to know more clearly what those ideas are about the Hashgacha. I think I'll take his question as an opportunity to mention something I don't know if we ever went into really thoroughly before. I know we went into it indirectly. But many times it's important to take something, some idea, that is sort of in a semi-conscious state in our mind, and to underline it and bring it out to the full view of the mind, so that then we can fully appreciate it. And I think this is a good opportunity to take this point up. It's an important point. It's a point that might not be emotionally very, I would say, make us very happy, but nevertheless, it's a point that we have to underline, we have to emphasize. Rambam says like this. It's in 46. Rambam talks about the study of metaphysics. The study of metaphysics, of course, is question. The study of the Hashgacha, the study of metaphysics. It says like this. Rambam talks about the preparation necessary that a person must have, preliminary studies a person must have before he can approach the area of metaphysics, the area of Hashgacha, the area of God. And these areas are very difficult areas. And before a person approaches them, there's certain preliminary studies that he must have. Without that, I mean, he's just wasting his time. So Rambam gives an example. It says like this. There is still another urgent reason why the preliminary disciplines should be studied and understood. During the study, when a person studies metaphysics, many doubts present themselves, and the difficulties or the objections raised against certain assertions are soon understood. A person sees certain things that he always held in Yahadis are so simple and so clear, and when he starts investigating them, he sees that this is impossible. Right? The difficulties or the objections raised against certain assertions means certain things that we know to be true from the Masorah, certain difficulties are raised against them, are soon understood. He says, just as the demolition of a building is easier than its erection. Right? It's easier to break down a building than to build one. So a person can see the difficulties and he can break down certain assertions of Yahadis very quickly, very easily, because It's much easier to break down a building than to build one, correct? The building over here, of course, represents the knowledge of terror, the secondary knowledge of terror, which is gained through the Masorah. So the Rambam says when a person investigates and he goes through the area of metaphysics and starts understanding, he tries to understand what the concepts are and how this, so many times certain difficulties present themselves in regard to certain basic assumptions of Yahadis. You better not sit over there, you're going to get hit somewhere over there. So he says that it's often easier to see the breakdown. It's often easier to see the breakdown than to really understand the ideas. I mean, it's obvious. See, because the breakdown is based upon certain notions. Like you have a certain notion. The kid, the Hashgacha relates to every person, every step of his life, and every little point. Just like you can equate it to a mommy and a daddy knows everything. See, very easy. But once a person starts going into the ideas of God and metaphysics, you might find certain difficulties in understanding how this works. Right? Okay. So he says like this. He says, while on the other hand, it is impossible to prove an assertion or to remove any doubts without having recourse to several propositions taken from these preliminary studies. He says it might be impossible to understand certain concepts without using the basic ideas that he has from the preliminary studies. By taking those, if he has the preliminary studies, by taking those, he might be able to see why certain things must be so. Okay? He who approaches metaphysical problems without proper preparation is like a person who journeys towards a certain place and on the road falls into a deep pit out of which he cannot rise, and he must perish there. If he had not gone forth but had remained at home, it would have been better for him. You see? So, that's a good marshal, huh? So, by the way, that's why the Rambam wrote that he wrote the Ma'ariv of Ucham. Why? He says, really, he didn't have to write the Ma'ariv of Ucham. Why? Because a person who really is intelligent and studied metaphysics, he said, would have the knowledge, total knowledge, wouldn't need a sefer. He says, but in metaphysics, he says, it depends on the person. He says, the swimmer will be able to come up with pearls, but he who cannot swim will drown. See, that's why I wrote the Mora. The Mora was written as he says, in the Mora, it doesn't matter. He says, a person will not be harmed. If he can't swim, he won't drown. But if he can swim, then he'll be able to have the same pearls. See, that's why I wrote it. So what the Rambam is saying here is that it's true, the metaphysics is really a great thing to understand certain concepts about God. Now, Shgacha, different things, how they work. But he says the person must be very careful. The journey might be very beneficial. It might be great to go on that journey. It might change his whole life if he gets there. Right? But the point is, if you're not prepared for the journey, you might be better off staying at home. See, that's the thing. So he says, Solomon has expiated in the book of Proverbs on sluggards and their indolence, by which he figuratively refers to indolence in the search after wisdom. Laziness in the search after wisdom. He thus speaks of a man who desires to know the final results, but does not exert himself to understand the preliminary disciplines which lead to them, doing nothing else but desire. You see? The desire, Shlomo says, the desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. He coveteth greedily all the day long, but the righteous giveth and spareth not. He says, what does it mean? That is to say, if the desire killeth the slothful, it is because he neglects to seek the thing which might satisfy his desire. He does nothing but desire, and hopes to obtain a thing without using the means to reach it. You see? It would be better for him were he be without desire. Why? Because without the desire, what does it mean? It says, when the desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. It means that the desire kills him. What it means by the desire killing him means what?
If he approaches it right.
Yeah, desire. A person who just wants the results, just wants the answers, and he cannot involve himself in the work. So a person is a lazy guy. He wants to accomplish something, but he can't do the work, right? So it kills him. Why? Because all he does is has desire. He's just in constant pain, constant torture. He's in constant pain, not conflict. He's in constant desire. He sits home and he wants to have the work done. He has a field, he wants a plow, and he just wants, but he will not go out there. So this is going to kill him, because the desire is going to build up in him until he can't take the pain anymore. So the same thing, of course, the mashal over here is the mashal is in regard to the physical, but the nimshal is in regard to the real idea he wants to get across is in regard to knowledge. So he says the same thing, that the people who have tremendous desire for knowledge and they want to know certain results, but they don't go about it through the proper work, the proper activities. So he says, then the desire is going to kill them, because all they have is a desire, but they don't have any satiation. It would be better for him were he without that desire. If he didn't have the desire to have knowledge, he'd be better off. Interesting Rambam. means if he didn't have the desire for knowledge, he'd be better off. It's a hard thing to say. Why is it so, though? It's simply because if he has the desire for knowledge, but he's ready to go after it and he's ready to put in the effort, he's ready to sit down and learn, he's ready to start making progress, then it's a tremendous thing. But if he's not going to do that, if he's not going to involve himself in learning, he's not going to involve himself in the preliminary studies which are necessary in order to get the knowledge, then it's just going to be torture, torturous existence. So it comes out that what would seem to be perfection, you say a person wants knowledge, that would seem to be perfection, right? It comes out, it's more harm. It's more harm for him than if he didn't have it. It's an amazing thing. He would be better off if he did not have that desire for learning. Did not have the desire. It's an amazing thing, huh? Somebody would ask you, who's better off? A guy that wants to learn, a guy that has a desire for knowledge, or a guy that doesn't have the desire for knowledge? What's the answer? Depends. Depends. What do you mean? Necessity. Of necessity, would you say that it's a different type of desire? Well, it's a good point he's bringing up. It's a good point. What do you say?
It's
a good point. What?
He only wants results.
You know, explain to me the two... let's first define... I'm more interested in the definition of the two types of desire. Yeah. Go ahead.
I just...
An ego thing.
Yeah.
And one is the true desire. Benefits of the knowledge. Because knowledge has certain benefits, right?
Yeah.
But isn't it possible for a person to have a desire for the true knowledge? If a person has a desire for ego, I understand.
But
I don't know if that has to do with laziness, because the laziness could be there in either case. You could have laziness where a person's desire for knowledge is ego, and you can have laziness where the person's desire for knowledge is a true good. He knows that there's a true good. Once he has the knowledge, he knows he's going to be in a different life, a totally different life. He's going to be in a different world. And a person that has knowledge has a different life. The life of the important thing, I think, Agav Orcha, I'd like to mention that the important thing a person must realize in the yeshiva is that he must recognize and see and try to see practically as much as he can that the life of a person who has knowledge of Torah is a totally different life. It's really completely different. I mean, this is the important thing that a person must realize. If a person doesn't see this and doesn't realize this, then his learning and everything else, I mean, has a very little meaning. A person has to realize. I always say, what's the pshat? Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha. What does it mean, Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha? What does it mean? It means that a person must have the realization, he must have the emotional realization of the benefits of living according to the Torah. That's what it means. Tachas Hashem avarta Hashem lekecha b'simcha v'tuv leivav me'roiv koil. That's in the v'avarta seifecha. Why? Because if a person does not realize the great benefit that he has in being able to live according to the Derech HaTorah, the person doesn't realize what type of perplexities, what type of frustrations he has avoided by having knowledge. Doesn't realize how people their desires are frustrated. They're basic. Maybe they look like they're enjoying life, but that's only on the outside. When you go into their personal lives, you see how much they're lacking, how much they're missing. They're completely lost. They don't know where to go, what the purpose is, what to do. Just constantly, everything is black. Everything is unclear. They have no knowledge. It's a total life of frustration. They don't know what's guiding them. All their efforts, they don't even know what they're for. They have absolutely no knowledge. Just total living a life of total frustration. And a person who has knowledge and really sees what life is all about, and he really sees where to go, just being able to see what's valuable and what's not valuable, and just being able to realize that he's not wasting his time doing crazy, nonsensical activities, I mean, which require tremendous effort. People put their lives into it, and it's nothing. It's absolutely wasteful. You see? That alone is a tremendous, tremendous benefit. A person must realize what the benefit of living according to the Torah is. If he doesn't realize that benefit, I mean, he's missing out the whole concept of Torah. He doesn't appreciate what the real good is. A person would understand well, the benefits that he would receive from the knowledge. Would it be possible for him to be lazy? That's the question. That's a good question. His question is, if a person would really perceive the benefits, is it possible for the person to be lazy? So that's an interesting question. Is it possible?
Yes, they're neurotic. I mean,
with reality. He knows the benefits. He knows the benefits. An ancient problem. Problem is like this. Does a person willfully harm himself? Okay, does a person ever willfully harm himself? Does he? No. The masochist doesn't harm himself because he thinks that's a benefit. That's why masochist is a different phenomenon.
I mean, he thinks out everything before he
does. It doesn't mean that this is what he wants. That's the only thing is. It's pleasure. That's his pleasure. It's just another form of pleasure.
A normal guy, he thinks out everything he does, and then he goes and haunts himself. Is that what he is?
Yeah, right. Yeah. A normal person who has knowledge, does a person who has knowledge ever, does a person, can a person willfully ever harm himself? In other words, or do we say no? That a person willfully will always do the thing which is best for himself, because that's natural along with his nature. The moment he sees what it is,
no,
the moment he sees what the good is,
no,
then he has to do it. He willfully will harm himself.
He willfully will
harm himself. Because he maintained that that is the greatest benefit. You see?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I maintain it.
Some of these, it's not, I wasn't the one that raised it. Somebody went there. It's an ancient problem. But the problem is like this. Problem, I'll tell you what the problem is. It's a good one to throw around because it has a lot of basic phenomena in it. Question is like this. Question is like this.
Willfully though.
Willfully by a doctor is can be done very easily without knowledge. But we could really, so therefore, let's take another illustration from a different area, like bridge building. But I'll tell you, you could actually keep it in the area of medicine too. You know how, if you say with the same event. In other words, two people who kill a patient with the same event, doing the exact same action, but one willfully and one not willfully, right? In other words, let's say you speak about the injection of a poisonous substance, right?
Okay. Muscle relaxant or something.
Too much muscle relaxant. So he puts in too much, and the guy becomes totally relaxed. What's that? The injection intentionally, the same injection, if it was done intentionally or unintentionally. Right, the same exact case. Who has more knowledge of medicine in that case? See, if we make it into the same case, then you can have it in the same area. You know what I mean? In other words, if you're right, might not take tremendous chachma to kill a guy, you're right. But if we take the exact same case in both instances, in other words, one doctor did it intentionally the same instance, another doctor did it accidentally. I don't mean that he didn't know what he was doing. I mean accidentally, he knew all the factors. You see, there's two types of accidentally over here. One accidentally means he didn't know what he was injecting, the nurse gave him the wrong thing. That's not called accidentally. I mean accidentally, he knew exactly what he was doing,
but he didn't know the effects.
You see, so in that case, we'd have to say the one that has more knowledge of medicine is the one that did it intentionally, right?
He's doing it on a different level.
Okay? Right? But as long as you keep it in the same case, you're going to have the same, you'll have the example. Right? Good and evil. The question is, who has more knowledge of good and evil? A person who does evil intentionally, or a person who does evil unintentionally?
Who has more
knowledge of evil, of good and evil? A person who does evil intentionally, or a person who does evil unintentionally? He who does the evil.
But the guy doesn't have knowledge of evil.
A person who has more knowledge of building bridges? A person who builds a faulty bridge intentionally, or who builds a faulty bridge? The same exact mistake, David. They do the same exact building. In other words, they construct it the exact same way, the exact same flaw in the bridge. But one does it intentionally, and one does it unintentionally. Who has more knowledge of the building?
The guy does it intentionally.
The guy does it intentionally, right? Who has more knowledge in terms of dentistry? A person that intentionally destroys your teeth or unintentionally?
Intentionally.
Who has more knowledge of good and evil? A person who intentionally does evil, or a person who unintentionally does evil?
One dilemma.
Very strange dilemma. Why? Because it will turn out like this, that he who does evil intentionally, correct, will have more knowledge than he who does evil unintentionally. Right? Now, if human perfection is going to be based upon knowledge, who is the more perfected one? The one who does evil intentionally, or the one who does evil unintentionally?
The one
who does evil intentionally. That indeed will be a strange result.
That's only knowledge.
That's not true.
Either because our intellect doesn't perceive it as kosher, or our emotions don't perceive it as kosher.
The question is,
if we are going to follow our emotions, then of course things have become very simple.
Not necessarily correct, but very simple. The dilemma. The dilemma would be like this. Either we're going to have to say that human perfection is not knowledge, right? That's one possibility. Human perfection is not knowledge. But if we are going to maintain that human perfection is knowledge, so then we're going to have to say the one that does evil intentionally is more perfected. Which would be which would give us a totally different
outlook
on you.
The way I want to explain
you make it in the fortune of terror, then you're supposed to go over anyways. You know that?
Okay.
You know why?
No,
you know why?
There's no Nafkamina.
Yeah, because he's doing it amazing anyways.
Right. Okay, yeah. But let's take other case.
I live a life of taiva, right? Do they ever realize that this life is the wrong life?
But the thing is that
good in life is simply physical pleasures. That's as good in life, right? Okay, that's the good. A hedonist, the total hedonist, the person, Nietzsche, who maintains that the good in life is simply physical power, physical enjoyment, that is the good in life, right? Now, are you saying that he's going to come to the realization one day? Who says so? Nietzsche never came to the realization. He maintained that way throughout his life, that this is the good, right? Okay, so therefore he made a mistake, right? The average person, the average individual, simply physical power, physical enjoyment, that is the good in life, right? Now, are you saying that he's going to come to the realization one day? Who says so? Nietzsche never came to the realization. He maintained that way throughout his life, that this is the good, right? Okay? So therefore, he made a mistake, right? The average person, the average individual, the only philosopher, the average individual that goes through this life, in a way which he never recognizes what good and evil is, right? Never recognizes good and evil. That's one person. Now let's say you take a person who knows what good and evil is, right? But he intentionally lives lives a life which is harmful. So which person has more knowledge of good and evil? Which person has more knowledge of good and evil? See, you think of a simple case like a murder. Now think of it. Take a case that's not so simple. Yes? So which one do you say, which one has more knowledge? There's no doubt about it. I mean, we can't argue. The one that has more knowledge is definitely the one that does it intentionally, right?
Yeah, sure.
Now therefore the question arises, who is better? The one that does it intentionally or unintentionally?
Well,
now if you're going to tell me... Now if you're going to tell me the one that does it unintentionally is better, right? So then you're going to maintain the one that has less knowledge is better. Right? If you're going to tell me the one that does it intentionally is better, then you're going to tell me that intentional evil is better than unintentional evil. Either way, you're going to, if we maintain that human perfection is a type of knowledge, so then we should say the one that has this knowledge is more perfected. Right? Okay. Now we've shown that in every case, when a person does something, when a person should do the incorrect thing, intentionally or unintentionally, of the two, who has more knowledge in the area? The intentional, right? All right. Therefore, in the area of good and evil, we have to maintain the same thing, that he who does evil intentionally has more knowledge than he who does evil unintentionally.
That's a specific case. He looks at something when he does the action.
One second. I'll get back to all the answers, but this is the question. So therefore, we would have to maintain that one who does evil intentionally, has more knowledge than the one that does evil unintentionally. Now, if human perfection is a form of knowledge, so then who is more perfected? The one that does evil intentionally. Now, that's going to come to a strange conclusion. The conclusion being that he who does evil intentionally is a greater person than he who does evil unintentionally. That is pretty. That's a pretty hard conclusion to accept. Okay, it's working out. He said, "All right, see the problem? Okay, that's the problem. Now let's take the solutions." Yes. And human perfection, you're saying, is not totally knowledge. Is that right? It's the application of knowledge, which leads to human perfection, right? Okay, now beyond that point, what are you saying?
Well, I'm saying that this guy has the knowledge, right? So the fact that he doesn't apply it the right way means that he's not using his vast knowledge, okay? He's not using this intellect which he has, assuming that he has this knowledge, correct? Now, if he has this knowledge and he's not using the logic to use it, then he's twice as bad as this guy who...
Why?
Well,
why? Knowledge, right? Because if you're going to tell me human perfection is knowledge, then you can't say it's twice as big, because he has knowledge.
Okay.
By the way, forget the dentist destroys your teeth intentionally. You can't say he's a bad dentist. That's bad. I remember the one time I was a dentist like that. That the he used to do like this. He wanted to make money. So what he did was, instead of really grinding out the decay fully, he'd always leave a little bit of decay in the bottom. So therefore, there was a guy like that in Williamsburg. So the guy used to always leave one cavity. And he'd usually have a guy, many times the guy didn't even have a cavity, he'd give a little grind, you know, so make sure the next time he gets it. So eventually the guy would lose his teeth on both sides evenly, so he could build him a bridge across, you know. And many people said he was a bad dentist. He wasn't a bad dentist, he was a very good dentist, right. But he was an unethical dentist. That's the difference.
He knew I was right.
Right. You agreed over here, yes? Anybody? Human perfection is not just a matter of knowledge, but human perfection has to do with the application of knowledge. Correct? In other words, human perfection would seem to be two things. Knowledge plus
use of it for a rational end,
right? Okay. Now there is a slight problem that we have to investigate. Yes?
There are a couple
of knowledge, correct?
Yeah.
Now, whenever we have a definition of something, you can't just say the thing is two things. Because the definition of something always means that there is one essential thing that it is, right? Correct? In other words, if I say a table is the flat surface plus legs, it's true that the flat surface plus legs are two things, but insofar as a table is concerned, there's only one entity.
It's not considered a table.
It's not, unless you have both. So both together form one entity. So in every definition, we have to always be able to show what the one entity is. Now, if we say that human perfection is knowledge plus a certain ability to apply, let's call it the ability to apply, all right? Knowledge plus the ability to apply, if these two things, you understand, aren't one, don't merge, then we can't possibly say that we have the definition of what perfection is, right? In other words, if you can't see, let's say you want to know what a car is. So I'll tell you, a car is a chassis plus a motor. So I can understand why a car is a chassis plus a motor, because I can see the way the chassis and the motor interrelate. Right? The chassis is the vehicle, the motor is attached to the vehicle, and a car is that object which can get me from place to place. In order to get me from place to place, I require two things. I require the motor to propel me, and I also require the chassis in order to be able to be in it. Right? So I see the union between these two things, and that's why a car emerges as one entity. Right? I don't know if General Motors knows that, but that's the way it works. Right? Okay. Show me how terrific it was. The seat was so comfortable, but the motor wasn't working. You know what I mean?
You just sat there. This is a good thing.
Merge and form one unified entity, right? Now, since everybody here agrees that knowledge and the ability to apply create one entity, which is perfection, let's understand how these two things merge. I mean, it's two separate things. Knowledge, obviously, the other thing is a type of attitude, let's call it. Right? A type of attitude. Just use the word attitude to facilitate matters. But I don't know if that's exactly what it is. We have to have some term we call it by. Correct? But it is not knowledge. Right? It is something other than knowledge. So it turns out that perfection is knowledge plus attitude, or plus something other than knowledge. If I have a better word than attitude, I'll take it. The ability to apply? Okay. Knowledge plus the ability to apply. Now, the ability to apply has nothing to do with knowledge, obviously. Right? Okay. So therefore, how do these two, when we say that these two things are perfection, correct? How does one stand in relationship to the other? I mean, two separate things. You can't say that one thing is made up of oranges and suitcases. I mean, there's no shaykhus. There has to be some relationship between the two. What is the relationship? I mean, in a car, the motor propels you, and the vehicle is something which is a means to utilize the propulsion of the motor, right? Now, how does it work over here? I mean, it has to be one thing. It can't be two separate things cannot merge into one thing if they have no relationship. Do you understand what I mean? You understand what I mean? You can't have... Does everybody understand my point? Now, whenever you have an entity, in order to define the entity, you must be able to see the singular object, the singular concept that is the essence of the entity, right? You can't say two things that have no relationship to each other. If you don't understand the relationship between the parts, you can't speak of them as one entity, right? You can't say a house and a dog is one entity. Well, what's the relationship between the house and the dog? It has nothing to do with it, right? The dog might have died in the house, but that doesn't mean it's one entity. Right now, since we've made this step, namely the step is that that is not knowledge alone, because then we come out to an absurd conclusion. So therefore, in order to avoid the absurd conclusion, what we maintained was that it's not knowledge, but it's a certain ability, right? But now we have to understand, how do these two relate to create perfection? Because if there's such a thing as perfection of the soul must be a singular entity. Now, what is the singular entity? They're two different things. One is knowledge. There's nothing more diverse, more unrelated than knowledge and an emotion, or knowledge and something which is not knowledge. It's two separate things. How do these two things merge, I mean, in the soul to create perfection? What is the common denominator between the two? It seems to be there's no common denominator. It's two different things. Do you follow? What is the relationship between the two? Until we see a relationship, we can't possibly move over here. You understand? Now, I want you to understand something. That even though this is something which everybody accepts, is so simple, if you'd ask the average person in the street, he'd say it's a very simple thing. But I want to show you that it's not such a simple thing. That things which we accept in our daily lives as being so clear-cut and so simple in terms of ethics, in terms of way of life, when we start investigating, like the Rambam says before, he says that during the study, many doubts present themselves. Right? And objections against certain assertions are soon understood. Demolition of the building is seen quite readily. All right? Now we see this point. We see this difficulty. Now but it's not just something which you can gloss over. If you just would have stopped where you stopped before, you would have stopped where the average person stopped. In other words, namely, that's not perfection. Perfection is just, you have to utilize knowledge. But we have to understand, if it's two things, how are these two things related? In what way are the two related? And if we don't understand that, we don't know what perfection is. Knowledge is a form of one entity. That's the problem we have to define. Why are the same, then you could never have a person who has knowledge and doesn't apply. And we're saying that you do have a person that has knowledge and doesn't apply, so obviously they are the same, right? Now, since they're not the same, because of the phenomena that we have, then there must be, then how can we say that these two things together, I mean, you can't just say two things that are unrelated comprise one entity. Okay? Are you understanding my question?
Yeah.
In other words,
in any situation, he killed somebody, right? And he did so wrongly. They don't have to say there's something was wrong with his conception of that killing is wrong, because in certain situations he loved up the air.
Everybody understand what he says? Yes, is it a good personality thing, or is it a knowledge thing? See, what you're maintaining is that it's a personality thing. What the issue is at hand over here, and what the positions are on the floor. Okay. Well, meantime, don't go out and do anything intentional. But we'll find out exactly what happened over here. The issue. Robbie maintains. Okay. All right. Robbie maintains that if the person intentionally does something wrong, then he's lacking in knowledge. Right? In other words, Robbie maintains that the perfection of man is only knowledge. It's not an extraneous thing, correct?
It's a definition of knowledge, being able to apply.
But if a person does, if a person, in fact, intentionally does evil, so then he lacks knowledge, correct? That's what he maintains. Now, what is the counter-argument? Is there any disproof to what Robbie's saying? In other words, I want you to understand something. I mean, over here, if we're really searching for knowledge, then we can't really be guided by our own feelings. We have to really see whether the argument stands or not. Now, I want to know if Robbie's argument stands or it doesn't stand. His argument is that he who willfully does evil doesn't really have full knowledge of evil. That's what you're maintaining, correct? Okay. You're not disproving
him. You're showing that there's no possibility
You're
answering the question.
No, he is answering the question, because with his possibility, he removes the question.
I just said, I can say the other guy.
Right? question was, if it's two different things, then how could the two different things become one thing? They're two unrelated things.
I'm not saying I didn't see it, how it has to be that.
Now, he's saying, one second, let's just take it like this. Let's understand if this, in terms of knowledge, we have to understand whether this possibility is correct or not, right? Okay, so if this, let's understand if this possibility is a possibility. Maybe it's wrong, but maybe you have another possibility, rather. But let's understand if his possibility is a possibility, okay? His possibility is namely that knowledge, if a person, it's not two things. Because if it's two things, we ran into a difficulty. The difficulty is what's the correlation between these two things that are inherently differentiated, right? So he answers, no, there's no problem. Why? Because it's all knowledge. And if you do evil intentionally, you lack knowledge. All right, what do you say?
I say it's based on that.
His question is like this, Robbie. His question to you is like this. Do you maintain, therefore, that knowledge is the perfection? That's funny. You maintain that knowledge is perfection, correct? And he who does evil intentionally lacks in knowledge, right? Okay. But our question was originally, who is worse? A person who does evil intentionally or unintentionally? What's your answer to that one? It's absurd to conclude that a person who does evil intentionally is better than the person who does evil unintentionally. I thought we agreed on that.
That's because of knowledge
lacking. All right, now one second. Now, therefore, in other words like this, I think that we've all agreed on that point, that a person who does evil, let's make sure we agree about it before we leave, that a person who does evil intentionally is definitely worse than a person who does evil unintentionally. We all agreed on that, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, since you maintain that knowledge really is the only element of perfection, right? Then let me ask you again, which one is worse? The one who does evil intentionally or the one who does evil unintentionally?
Correct.
Now, one second. The one who does evil intentionally, you say he still lacks knowledge, correct?
Yes.
But who lacks more knowledge? The one who does evil intentionally or the one who does evil unintentionally? Who lacks more knowledge?
Unintentionally.
So in that case, who would have more knowledge?
Intentionally
would have more knowledge, right? So who would be more perfected according to your system?
The intentional.
Because he has more knowledge. But the question was that we said to begin with that he who does evil intentionally must be worse than he who does evil unintentionally, correct? That's the absurdity, right? So in other words, now you're back to the question again. They both lack knowledge, right?
None of them are more knowledgeable.
Here, equivocally, okay? In other words, I'm asking in the case. Let's take a case. Now, I mean intentional. I don't mean whether he's really intentional. I understand he says he's really not intentional. But let's take the case where a guy who commits murder intentionally, namely, he knows that it's not just to do it, right? And he does it anyways. The other guy doesn't know that it's not just to kill.
Okay.
Right? Okay. Now, who has more knowledge of justice? Who has more knowledge of justice?
I can say the guy who does it unintentionally.
Has more knowledge of justice?
Yes, they
won. Why?
Because the guy who does it intentionally lacks two knowledges.
Lacks two knowledges?
I think it was
the truth. When I say knowledge, I mean knowledge is subject to variation of degree now, right? Now, who is closer to the truth? The one who has knowledge that murder is an evil, or the one who does not have knowledge that murder is an evil? Which one's close to the truth?
Murder
is an evil, obviously, right? So you must say that he has more knowledge, correct?
Closer.
Okay. Now, therefore, in that case, according to Robbie maintains that what is perfection? Perfection is totally knowledge, correct? Then it's only knowledge. So now, will not the question come back again? Namely, the one who does it intentionally certainly has more knowledge. He might be missing. You're saying that he definitely doesn't have all knowledge, total knowledge. But in terms of amounts of knowledge, who has more? Who has larger? Who is closer to the truth? The one who does it intentionally, right? So therefore, you're going to have to maintain that the one who does it intentionally is definitely better than the guy who does it unintentionally, right? Is that not true?
Yeah, because he's an
absurdity. Right? But isn't that an absurdity? So therefore, we're back to our absurdity again.
If
he does it unintentionally, then the one who does it intentionally. Let me ask you a question. Do we see any more knowledge in the one who does it intentionally? Unintentionally?
No.
So therefore, in that area, they're both equal, right? And in the area of knowledge of what's just and what's not just, who definitely has more? The one that does it intentionally. So it comes out if perfection is all knowledge, so the one that does it intentionally definitely has more knowledge than the one that does it unintentionally. So we're back to the dilemma again. All right. In other words, what Robbie did was he brought us around about face back to the dilemma. He got us out of one problem, which was the correlation between the two, but he brought us back to the original problem. Okay? In other words, that's what I'm saying.
That's not absurdity.
To absurdity, which was the original reason why we posited that perfection is two things. It's knowledge plus a certain ability, right? That's why we posited that. And now we're saying it's one. Now it comes right back to the dilemma. But as I want to show you, that instead of arguing with him and saying I maintain and he maintains, we have to see over here whether we know. If we don't know, then we can't say that our possibility is better than his, and we have to really see what
the
perfection, a type of knowledge, or is it not a type of knowledge, or is it something else? Now, if we should say that it has nothing to do with knowledge, then we'll be maintaining a very maintaining a premise that knowledge basically is meaningless. We have to change a whole whole different philosophy of life. We're going to maintain that perfection is possible without knowledge, and knowledge is something extraneous to perfection. So then, man should certainly not strive for knowledge in order to perfect himself, because perfection is something other than knowledge, right?
Okay.
Do you think that it's not knowledge? One possibility that it is. Let's take both. One possibility is that it's not knowledge, right? In that case, a person should not strive for knowledge in order to attain perfection, because knowledge is something other, right? However, if we should maintain that perfection is knowledge, then we have a problem. The problem is that if a person does something, does evil intentionally, right? And one person does evil intentionally, and another person does evil unintentionally, the question would be, who is worse? Right? So automatically you'll tell me that the person who does evil intentionally is worse. Correct? Right. But the dilemma is as follows. We find in every area that a person who does the opposite of his profession intentionally has more knowledge than a person who does the opposite unintentionally. For instance, we have several examples. A person who, a dentist who will destroy your teeth intentionally, would have more knowledge than a dentist who destroys your teeth unintentionally. Correct? Right? Because a person who does it unintentionally means he didn't know what he was doing. Right? But a dentist who purposely destroys your teeth definitely has more knowledge of dentistry. A doctor who purposely destroys your body certainly has more knowledge than a doctor who unintentionally destroys your body. Right? Accidentally kills you. Accidentally harms you. Right? Now, of course, we're speaking in the same given case. We mentioned that last time. In other words, in the same given prescription. The one doctor gave the wrong prescription, this exact identical prescription, same situation. He gave the wrong prescription unintentionally, the other one gave it intentionally. Right? Now, granted, the one that gave it intentionally might not be the nicest person in the world, but still, insofar as medicine is concerned, who had more knowledge? Who had more knowledge as far as medicine is concerned? The one who did it intentionally. You must say that. All right? Do you understand why you must say that? No? Okay. All right. You want to stop talking? By unintentionally, we do not mean accidentally. We do not mean accidentally, but unintentionally, we mean that there was no accidental occurrences. But he did everything he could, but he lacked the knowledge. Right? Okay. Who has more knowledge of good and evil? A person who does evil intentionally or a person who does evil unintentionally? Correct? Now, it would seem from everything we've premised so far that the person who does evil intentionally would have to have more knowledge. Right? Yet, if perfection is a type of knowledge, correct, then we should have to say that the one is he is more perfected who does evil intentionally. And this would seem to be going against the basic premise, namely that a person who does evil unintentionally is less guilty than a person who does evil intentionally, right? Do you see the dilemma? It's a paradox. You see it? And Misa before. Yeah. You mentioned that too last week, right? Yeah. 2 weeks ago. Now the thing is, learning and Misa have nothing to do with this. Because in learning and Misa, we were not discussing knowledge of perfection. We were discussing knowledge per se. We're talking about there's two types of knowledge. There's knowledge per se, and then there's knowledge of perfection. Now, last time we were discussing knowledge per se, we weren't discussing knowledge of perfection. We're discussing knowledge. A person sees what knowledge is. He sees chachma, and he sees the chachma of God, right? Doesn't have to be in the area of what's, we weren't talking about knowledge of perfection. Any area. He learns Gemara, he sees the chachma of God, right? He knows the physics, he sees the chachma of God. Understands the universe, sees the chachma of God. The Rambam had knew all the chachmas, right? Astronomy, mathematics, every area showed him the greatness of God. That's knowledge we're talking about. But here we're talking about a specific knowledge which involves perfection, right? Okay, now in this...
I don't really understand that because...
That's in front of us, right? Now we have to find the solution. I'm ready to accept any solution from any area. Perfection per se is not knowledge.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Then what, my friend, is perfection?
Perfection is...
What means does he use that knowledge to do the correct action?
He uses his...
It means, and it's also an end at the same time. Because you're telling me he uses his knowledge with knowledge to do the right thing. But I asked you, what is knowledge? Is knowledge the means or is knowledge the end? That was my question. You're fitting knowledge.
See, true knowledge. See, the thing
both
is,
slots.
The true knowledge.
Well, that's what I want to know.
But the thing is this: if a person does the wrong action, knowing the right knowledge, right?
Yeah.
So in other words, I'll say this: knowledge is the end. In Yadis, knowledge is the end result that everybody has to strive for. However, what qualifies the knowledge? In other words, knowledge is a thing that can be qualified as being good or as being no good. So in other words...
It can be.
What?
It can be.
Right. It's a qualitative thing. Now, if the person's action is in line with his knowledge, right, so then he qualifies the knowledge as being the end goal, right? However, if, insofar as the individual has knowledge and he does not use that knowledge for the correct action and not the logical action, then... That knowledge is not true knowledge.
I'm not talking about false knowledge. I'm talking about the real knowledge. If the real perfection is knowledge, right?
Yeah.
So then it should turn out that the one who... In other words, the real perfection is knowledge, and then it will come out that the one who's closer to knowledge, who has... See, this thing has to be subject to variation of degree also. I don't think anybody's going to argue about that point. In other words, we know that Olam Haba is a subject to variation of degree. There's a quantitative factor there. One guy has more knowledge, whatever it is, more, whatever it is, let's not say knowledge because that's the problem here, he's going to get a higher chelik, right? And one who has less gets less. But there are different levels, different degrees, right? It's not an all or nothing thing, right? It could be nothing, but the nothing is it's like a thermometer. Keep going down. Quantitative factors. Goes down. Below zero. Right? Now, since that is the case, so if knowledge is the perfection, right?
Yeah.
So then it should turn out that he who has more knowledge must stand in a higher relationship. Right? Must stand in a higher relationship to the one who has less knowledge on the scale. If it's a scale, right? Fine. So therefore, the old question will return. Right? Quite namely, intentional and unintentional, right? If you're going to tell me that it is a type of, and I don't care what type of knowledge you tell me, real knowledge, not real, but if you're going to tell me it's knowledge, then that's going to be the problem.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Well, what do you say? Knowledge. Now, if we're going to say that is the perfection, right? So then the old question will be, then it'll have to be a knowledge of good and evil. Will it not have to be a knowledge of good and evil? It will have to be a knowledge of good and evil. I'll answer for you. So therefore, the moment you're going to tell me it's a knowledge of good and evil, you're going to have to say that the one who does it intentionally has more knowledge. And therefore, he's going to have to be better, which sounds crazy, which we cannot accept. It's a crazy premise. But we'll find logically from what we're saying. Right? See the problem? So what? Perfection really isn't a knowledge. But perfection really is the control of the emotions. Right? That's not knowledge.
Knowledge
control of the emotions is not knowledge at all.
Knowledge how to control your emotions?
Not knowledge at all. Not knowledge at all. Not knowledge at all.
That's not knowledge.
Not knowledge
at
all.
What?
You can have knowledge how to control emotions and not control emotions.
You don't have knowledge to control emotions.
You have the facts.
Excuse me?
No, he's saying the control of the emotions.
The emotions. He's not talking about knowledge of the control of emotions. And if you're going to tell me it's knowledge of the control of emotions, then I'll ask you the same question. You have two guys.
Have knowledge of control of emotions.
One guy has knowledge how to control the emotions, and the other guy doesn't have knowledge how to control his emotions. The guy that has knowledge how to control his emotions purposely doesn't control his emotions. And the other guy doesn't have knowledge, doesn't control it because he doesn't know how. Now, who's worse? Any knowledge you're going to make it, the same question is going to be, anytime you're going to make it into a knowledge of good and evil, I'm going to ask you the same question, but whatever knowledge you're going to tell me, I'll just raise the question in that frame of knowledge. You know what I mean? So that obviously, you're not going to get out of it that way. There's no way out of it that way, because whatever knowledge you're going to tell me, I'm going to tell you, okay, now I'll give you the same experiment in that case.
So we're basically saying now
knowledge is the perfection, but knowledge is not the perfection.
All by itself,
the perfection is not knowledge. That's what he's saying. He is saying that perfection is not knowledge. That's what he's saying. So you're putting knowledge into the picture, but that doesn't help you insofar as I ask you a question. What is the perfection? And you're going to tell me that the perfection is not knowledge. We'll not be able to say any more. That perfection is knowledge, but perfection is going to be the emotions.
It was
Robbie.
Which coffin?
It's going to be like this. Now, let's say, for instance, like, let me see if this is what you're asking. In other words, like, there are certain traits. If that's the case, then we have to say perfection is certain traits. Certain emotional traits, like, for instance, self-control. Would be a trait that would be considered a perfection, right? Correct. Diligence would be a trait that's considered perfection. Diligent person, the person is very energetic, able to carry out his plans, right? It's considered perfection, right? You'd say, self-control, power of the will, right? Now, if we take a look carefully at Hitler, Yamach Shemal, you'll find out that he had those qualities. Right? True or false?
True.
And let me ask you a question. Would he have been able to do evil if he didn't have those qualities? Then we see that those qualities were really an instrument of evil. Correct? Now, it would be hard to understand how that thing which we say is perfection should simultaneously be an instrument of the greatest evil that has ever befallen mankind. That would be difficult to comprehend.
Self-control,
diligence, many of these qualities. Is that your question? Yeah. His question is, in other words, like this. Let's say, for instance, if you're going to tell me that the perfection is the ability to follow the knowledge that you have, right? So then, let's say, for instance, you start off with Russia's premises. Start off with, he has these premises. And he has these premises because he doesn't have any knowledge, so he has the wrong premises, right? Now, since he has these wonderful traits, so he's able to carry out exactly all his premises, exactly the way he thinks they are, right? But then it'll turn out that because of his perfection, he's able to create the worst evil in the world, right?
Yeah, but that's
wrong with knowledge.
I mean, with his knowledge, is it wrong?
I mean, we have to make a premise that it's not
what?
Only
with knowledge. You see, so then you're telling me it can't be a type of knowledge, right? Now, if you're going to tell me the other way, it's not a type of knowledge. But it's what it is the emotions being aligned with whatever knowledge you have, right? That's the perfection, right? So now I'll show you a guy that has crazy, that has making a mistake in premises, and he's perfectly in line with that, and he's the worst rusher the world ever saw. So what are you going to tell me? That's perfection?
So you have to go back.
You're not talking about appreciation of knowledge. Excuse me?
When I say attachment, I mean that it's an enjoyment of knowledge. I mean by attachment.
But he enjoys knowledge.
No. I'm not asking you.
He loves it. The guy fought it through.
What do you mean?
What kind of knowledge? I don't know what you mean. That you call it
his mind. There's no question about that.
I mean,
but you're not telling me anymore that's perfection. That's not his premise.
His premise is not that the knowledge... His predilection is the emotions being in line with the with whatever knowledge you have. Right? That's what he said it is. Right? Do you know what I mean?
True perfection.
What it was that it was the a certain emotional state where it's in the, where the emotions are in line with the knowledge, right? Oh, now I'll show you that the... what?
Love learning.
Love, appreciation of knowledge. Right?
Yeah, but he has not yet.
A guy like Lieberman in JTS. Rabbi Lieberman in JTS. There's a man who's tremendous London. Right? Tremendous London. Man, he looked first to look for a position in the Orthodox community. He couldn't get it. What happened was that JTS, because he was so renowned, they knew he knows Talmud. He's the authority in Talmud. So they took him as the head of their Talmud department. He passed in all the shalas. And he helped conservatism grow to a tremendous, tremendous degree. And what was his purpose? Somebody spoke to him once. They asked him why he does it. He gave a very simple answer. He said, I sit in line all day. How else can I sit in line all day? He didn't ask that. Absolutely. The president says, Shema Taimai says that the president will say that, look, I won't work, love Torah, and I'll be in his finest man of Dhaka. He says, anyone that does that, he says, destroys Yahadus, Kava Mar Adas, Goram Rolatsma, he caused evil to himself, Natal Chayav Min Olam, he took his life away from this world and from the next world, and that's it. He says, there's no Chayav Olam, finish.
That's the discussion.
But he loves, loves knowledge.
Yeah, I have 15 children.
What?
The
greatest Chil Hashem. Chil Hashem Shemayim, of course. Chil Hashem Shemayim. So I tell you, many times people don't realize it. Chil Hashem Shemayim. Chil Hashem Shemayim is the worst fate. The worst fate. Why do you think I'll tell you now? I'll tell you something. It happens on a small scale in yeshivas as well. Why? Because you come in front of yeshiva and you see enough food stamps come in front of yeshiva. You see yeshivas in the filthiest place. See, now why is it that it's that way? I'll tell you why it is that way. Because the people in the yeshiva aren't perfected. You see? They're imperfected. Why are they? And I'll show you why precisely they're, and how their imperfection expresses itself. When the people on the outside clean their lawn and keep their street clean for a different reason, for an emotional reason, because they take pride in their home. Now, once a person learns in the yeshiva that these things are nonsensical, so immediately he abandons them, right? So therefore, his house becomes the filthiest place, right? Ah, but there's one step he forgot. The step he forgot was Chil Hashem Shemayim. That he shouldn't. Yeah, he left the wrong reason for doing it, but he forgot to apply the right reason, and the right reason is it's a degradation for Torah. It's the greatest degradation. It's politics. I have to use the word for that. This is politics of God. This is regular politics. This is Chil Hashem Shemayim. So the point is, but the people who are involved, those people. I'm not saying all the guys. I'm saying anyone that does this. Is certainly on a very, very low level, because what he's doing is that he's not living according, he's just attaching himself now emotionally to learning, but he's not really living the life of perfection, because life of perfection demands that a person does every action according to the way rationality dictates, and here rationality dictates that he should keep it clean, right? Not for the other reason that other people do it, but for a more important reason, actually a greater reason than what they do with the personal pride of ownership. But he should do it for a greater reason, for the real reason. But he doesn't do it, so he's imperfected. That happens as a common day occurrence. That's the same thing we're discussing here. Yes. See, his point was that it's appreciation of knowledge, right? Okay. But let's say you couldn't, let's say there's no such illustration. Forget about Lieberman. What would you say about his answer? Would his answer be good?
Appreciation of knowledge?
Yeah. So I can get out of that question.
No.
What?
Any guy, according to that, anyone who appreciates knowledge, you think Hitler, he appreciated it. He loved his knowledge, he appreciated it.
No, he didn't. Just to say he didn't. He didn't appreciate knowledge. No question about it. That wasn't his appreciation, was ego. His appreciation was ego. Knowledge is only a means for ego. That was all appreciation.
You see, he did appreciate it. Fine, he appreciated it through the ego, but he appreciated it.
No, he didn't appreciate knowledge. That's not an appreciation of the thing. That's just using the thing as a means for self-glorification.
Appreciate
yeah, appreciation, appreciating knowledge for study. Yeah.
The answer is because when you tell me appreciation of knowledge, what you're telling me is the form of perfection. Only the form, you see. But then my question is, and to reach this appreciation of knowledge, does that require knowledge or is that just an emotional state? Do you follow? The moment he says it's the appreciation of knowledge, he's giving me the form of perfection. Do you understand what I mean? There's a difference between the form of perfection and the cause of perfection.
The cause?
Of course. Because now my question is, if that state of appreciation of knowledge, is that brought about by a knowledge or is that brought about simply by a certain emotional state? Follow? And now, in other words, he's telling me the acts. He's showing me the actions which are perfection. Right? But I would like to know the person who has those actions. You see? What is it in him which gives him that perfection? Is it just he's just born that way? He's born that way. If you're going to tell me that, then you're going to be telling me that perfection does not involve knowledge again. Even though his whole life is appreciation of knowledge, but perfection does not involve knowledge. Why? Because he has no knowledge of what he's doing or why. You ask the person, you say, my friend, why are you doing this rather than that? And he'll not be able to give you one reason. And he might even say like this. He might even say, I appreciate knowledge, but I should be making money, because making money is better. It's a weakness on my part. I'm very weak. See? I have a weakness. I have a time. Unfortunately, I can't let go of knowledge. I wish I could, but I just can't. There's a case like this. The Rav one time mentioned that he had a professor in Berlin that he went to mathematics professor. So I went into his room at night time and he wanted to speak with him. So the man was not Bikaris, an atheist. So he was sitting there learning Gemara. So the Rav asked, and the Rav said, you're learning Gemara? He says, what kind of thing is this? He says, I'll tell you why. He says, the one who caused me to learn Gemara was your grandfather. He said, he destroyed my life. Because I learned by him, he says, I learned by him, he says, and I saw the beauty of learning. He says, I could never live without that enjoyment again. He says, and I have to learn now and sit down every night and learn and go over all the concepts and the ideas that I learned by him, you know, and suffer the torture because I'm in direct conflict with the way I live. I don't live that way. He lives like an Epicurus, you know. And here he has to learn Gemara, and the conflict is killing him. He says, but he has no choice. That's what he said. So there's a person who says he appreciates knowledge, but it's a weakness. He can't get it out of his system. Now I'll ask you, according to you, you're going to be telling me that this guy is perfected, right? I would hate to think that that's perfection, even though he appreciates knowledge. See? That's why when you tell me the appreciation of knowledge, you're giving me the specific form, specific action. But I'm asking you, what is the universal? What is the universal of perfection? Do you understand what I mean? Okay. What's the knowledge vis-a-vis that particular thing? Go
ahead.
Your answer is like saying perfection is learning, doing good midos, and this. You're fine, but I want to know what causes that. Is it a knowledge, or is it just an emotional state? You follow what I'm saying? That's the point.
Really?
So regardless of the question that you raised, you know what I mean? He's not answering the question. He's giving you the form, but I want to know what is the underlying cause of that form. Why? What is it? Is it just a natural thing? I was born that way. Or is it some knowledge there that causes the guy to do that?
Even in your illustration, you show the guy that...
appreciation of knowledge. It's not appreciation of knowledge. In other words, I'm sure... See, he's saying it's appreciation of knowledge. Then it's a different kind of knowledge. Not the appreciation of knowledge, but it's living according to a certain... That type of knowledge, different kind of knowledge. In other words, he's giving me the knowledge of the action he's giving me.
Your illustration, I don't even believe that.
That you're giving him a case where the guy has appreciation of knowledge, right? And he still isn't living a perfected way, right?
Right.
And I'm saying that logically he didn't answer the question. You know what I mean? I'm using it. It's true the illustration.
All right.
Well,
then,
I have a question. I'm saying he's not answering the question. You know what I mean? He's not answering because he's just telling me the actions. He's telling me what the form is. This is the form. But I want to know what leads you to that form. How do you get to that form? And what is the difference between a person that has that and doesn't have that? Is the difference between a person that has that form and doesn't have that form of life, is it a certain knowledge that the person who has that form has? You see? Or is it just an emotional state that he has? You know what I mean? That's the question.
Either way, we have a concept.
Right. And in other words, he didn't answer the question. See? You know what I mean? He didn't answer the question. He just told what the form is. Now, I want to know, a person who has that form, does he have a certain knowledge that causes him to have that form? Is that what the perfection is? What's the cause of that perfection? Or is it just simply that he does this? They like to do this. In which case, it's not knowledge again. Whatever it is. He's telling you what it is. Or is there the point that we mentioned before? Or I want to clarify one point. Like we said, certain qualities like self-restraint, diligence. We find Rishayim that have those qualities, right? Now, therefore, the one thing becomes clear that when people praise these particular qualities, they're making a big mistake. What is the mistake they're making?
These qualities per se are nothing.
That's right. These qualities per se are nothing. These qualities per se are absolutely zero. Why? Because these qualities could be the instrument of the worst evil. You understand what I mean? So the common man who praises certain qualities, like I say, he's a diligent man. He has tremendous will. He's ambitious. All these qualities are per se to have no value, because these qualities have been used as the most destructive, in the case of the most destructive individuals, right? It's part of some of the most destructive machinery that has ever assembled in mankind. So you definitely cannot say that this per se, these are qualities. I mean, people make a mistake because people always judge the accidents. They don't look into the picture. Say the man is a very energetic man. He works day and night. That's right. Al Capone also worked day and night. You know, but people, it's amazing that people don't think of it. It's so obvious. But yet they don't, to them it doesn't mean anything. The thing is, it's not the quality of working day and night it's not these qualities per se that's the good. What is the good? What is the good is the thing itself is the good. The objective itself is the good. Now, these qualities are only an expression of how much attachment there is to the good. You understand what I mean? How much attachment there is to the good. But they are not the good in themselves. You follow? You understand what I'm saying? It's only an expression of how much attachment there is to the good. Like a person that learns Torah day and night, it's not the fact that he has self-control that is the quality. The good is Torah. The fact that he's learning all the time shows how attached he is to the good. But it's nothing more than that. It's not the quality per se is not the good. This is obvious. It's an obvious thing. Most people have looked at it. They think that the Midah per se is the perfection. The Midah per se is not the perfection. The Haraya, the worst Rishayim have all of these Midahs. Any one of these Midahs are fine. I'll show you the worst Rishayim that have it. Okay? Alright? And you'll see that the reason why they were able to accomplish their evils precisely because of these Midahs. So I can't tell me the Midah per se is the perfection. Midah per se can never be perfection. That's a mistake.